Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? Is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried? Yes, my voice has gone down a little bit. Is it more smooth and sultry, or does it just sound like I have a cold? I think it's spring allergies. I'm an asthmatic, and I'm just all congested, but I'm doing all right. Yeah, listen to that. Is this my new podcasting voice? I don't know. I don't think it'll always stay this way. But I'm just, any recommendations besides, you know, you got your teas, you got your soups, you guys got any tricks to losing a cold, getting decongested in the food and drink realm, maybe a nice hotty toddy with some, you know, whiskey bourbon, let me know. I would appreciate that. But this is a fun episode. This is with William F. Spencer. He is the host of Bavuster Podcast. He also is like a social media manager for different food and beverage companies. He's just a cool guy, and you'll hear how we met, and you'll get to hear all about him, and a pretty classic indie film by Jim Jarmusch, and just a lot more. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I enjoyed talking with Will. I always enjoy talking with Will, and so here we go. Will, thanks so much for coming on by. It's great to have you. So let's get into it. We met because of my roommate Tommy.
That's right.
Yeah. You were at Mod Cup.
Mod Cup in the Heights, yeah.
In the Heights in Jersey City, where we both live.
Yep.
And my roommate Tommy, my buddy Tommy, he's someone, he goes anywhere and he meets new people.
Yeah.
And just starts up conversations, and he's like, yeah, he comes back. And I don't know what I was doing, but I was here, and he came back, and he's just like, hey, I just met this guy, Will, and
yeah.
You guys are a lot alike. And
yeah. It's funny, we are.
Yeah. And he gave me your number, and I, you know, maybe you told him your Instagram or something like that, too.
I think you sent me an email.
Yeah, email. Mm-hmm. And, and we ended up meeting for coffee, and then we've gone to a diner together,
yep,
and we've been talking, and so why don't you tell the foodie fans out there, like, who you are, and just, like, when food became more than just, you know, eating, and just, like, you know, became, you know, the bigger thing in your life.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for inviting me on your podcast. My name is Will, and I was a former corporate chef for many years, and I fed at a helicopter plant in Connecticut, so food really entered my life pretty early. But I got tired of cooking, and I left, and I went to various jobs along the way. But food really has been instilled into me. It wasn't until I came to move from Connecticut to New Jersey, where I live with my wife, that I really started to get into, like, photography.
Okay.
I was always a videographer. Like, we did rock bands.
Similarity number one.
Yeah, there it is.
I was going to start doing checks along the way.
Sorry. Check number one. So we did I had a small band of friends we met through Meetup in Connecticut, and we did music videos. So cool. Basically, we all sat around a table, and there's shooters from News, My Nine, with Craig Shepard. Good shout out for him.
Yeah.
He taught me how to be a news shooter and capture things in a journalistic way.
Cool.
And then I have another friend, Dave Distinti, who's a director of ABC Television. He does the nightly news program. I just remember when it was Peter Jennings. That's how old I am, right? But he directs all that, and I've been actually in the control room.
Yeah.
So I've seen that. It's pretty amazing stuff. So we all sat around a table one day and said, what do you want to do? And I said, I'd like to take what MTV did and smash it together with the local music scene. And they're like, let's just do it. So we had so many equipment. We had awesome. So many young people.
Yeah.
So we just went out and did it. We shot 86 bands. And
wow.
At the local scene in New England,
yeah.
It at the time it was all screamo metal. Like, I couldn't figure it out. Like, no one understood the words. Rah, 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 whatever. So, but we had a good time. I learned a lot.
Yeah. It's great when you get to meet fellow creative minds and everyone's just like, for the most part, on the same page, and you just go and you start creating.
Yeah. In Connecticut, I had like a core group of friends if we wanted to do something. And when I came here, I tried to find it. I've been in the Heights now almost going on 10 years.
Wow.
And it was until recently until I met you and the chef that I've been talking to, Chef Rudy. We're about doing some collaborative, creative work together.
Yeah.
So I haven't found anyone that's been like similar to that until recently. So I'm happy to meet you guys and do some creative shit.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, and like, I mean, like, and then we met up at Mod Cup and we talked for over an hour and we were just sharing kind of like what we've done, what we want to do.
Yeah.
And one of your big things is your diner documentary. So let's talk about that for a little bit, whatever you'd like to share.
Yeah. I have been a diner fan since I was 10.
Awesome.
My Nana took me to a diner in Stamford, Connecticut.
Okay.
And I used to think it was Curly's Diner, which is an old, real old diner.
Yeah.
But it's a Colonnade Grill. I was just corrected by my Uncle Bob.
Okay.
But
Uncle Bob.
I know. So, but that was where I first met people, and I just remember the commotion about the diner. But everyone was so friendly, and everybody makes a big, like, when you're young, everyone makes a big deal over you, and that's really what set the hook for me.
Sure, yeah.
So, but it wasn't until my family moved to South Florida, and then at some point I came back, and it wasn't until I came back to Connecticut that the diner bug bit me again.
Okay.
So, and that's why I would go to local diners and talk to like everyone at the counter and met all the owners. And if you really want to get to know a community, go to the counter at any diner. We call it counterintelligence. That's, I wish I made the word up. But at
that's
the
good.
Plaza Diner in Shelton, Connecticut, you'd go and sit at the counter. The farther you got away from the cash register, there's only like 8 stools.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
It's a great saying.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. So and the farther you get away from the cash register, the wilder the conversation got.
Yeah.
So at the end of the counter, the guy goes, because we were talking about politics as usual. And he was like, this is like counterintelligence. And then he would do the quote, air quotes.
Yeah.
And then so ever since then, I would tell my best friend, we do counterintelligence. So we'd all hang out and talk.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's what set the hook. And when I came here to New Jersey, it's the diner capital of the world.
It is. I'm glad you said that. Like, that's something that I hold dear as a, you know, born, raised, educated, living, probably dying in New Jersey.
Yeah, you're a New Jerseyan, right?
I'm a New Jerseyan, yeah. North New Jersey, which is even, I feel like, is even more the stronghold of diner culture.
Yeah.
And, you know.
The only, my biggest beef about New Jersey is there's the only argument is the Taylor ham versus pork roll.
Sure.
And I get tired of hearing about it. As if from someone from Connecticut, we don't have that.
Okay.
So, but it's like, oh my God, can you just call it pork? Can you, I mean, come
well,
on,
that was
Taylor
whole,
pork.
I won't go into the full thing. So I'm, you know, a Taylor ham enthusiast being from North Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole history behind that is the inventor, his last name is Taylor.
That's right.
And so I'm someone that I'm like, well, we're, you know, and then Taylor is the most popular brand, but there's a lot of things out there that you call something by the most popular brand from, you know, cola and Kleenex. And
The Xerox machine.
Exactly.
Let's Google it.
Perfect. Yeah. So between honoring the man's memory and then just being the most popular brand, I like to, and I think it just sounds nicer than pork.
I agree, but it's the argument that it's like
yeah
it goes on and on
it's the Hatfields and the McCoys of Jersey.
It's totally true, right?
Is there anything in Connecticut that has or I mean that's part of the New England area, so or even New England that there is like you know.
The only controversy we have is in sports.
Yeah.
So at some point there's a Mason-Dixon line. So either you're a
New York team,
Jets, Giants, Yankees, Mets, or you're Boston and the Patriots. And I hate the Patriots. So
do I.
Yeah.
Check.
There it is. Check. All right, who's your baseball team?
Yankees.
All right, I'm a Mets fan, but it's still...
I got nothing against the Mets. Mets fans have things against the Yankees. I don't have anything against the Mets.
Yeah, I got you. I got you.
One of my best friends, he's a diehard Mets fan.
Yeah.
And also, and Citi Field has way better food than Yankee Stadium. So.
I think that was done by design, too, because they brought in better vendors. I think they had the craft beer scene there first.
Well, yeah, they got a brewery in there. Someone we've both had on our podcast, Pat LaFrieda.
Pat LaFrieda, that's right.
Huge.
Huge Met fan, fan.
Yeah, and but like huge component of making that food scene at Citi Field stand out amongst the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to go to Penzi and do a podcast there.
Ooh.
Because he's got his Pat LaFrieda like kiosk.
Yeah.
So have you ever been to Penzi?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's the best experience in the world. It's a food hall.
Yeah.
Right out next to Penn Station. And they have kiosk, and he has one of them. It's the only place I know that he has a restaurant. I think in Citi Field he may have something now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can get his food there. You can get
beer.
Yeah,
it was his first, like, whether they always call it the brick and mortar.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. It's amazing. I'll buy Pat LaFrieda all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was even somewhere – oh, there's a place in Hoboken, if you've ever been to it, Moran's Pub.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think they have the best burger around. And then I was just there the other day and I hadn't noticed it, maybe just because Pat's name is much more, I don't know, just brought to my attention now in my life and everything. But I think I still would have, you know, before I met him and had him on the podcast, I still knew who he was and knew his product. But I think menus are taking much more attention to Ed, including his name.
Yeah.
Because that's a standout in the industry.
It's a name brand.
Yeah.
I wish diners would adopt a higher product of meat. I know they work on lower margins, being a former food guy, and behind in the back of the house, I understand the food costs, but you could bring so much more on a name brand.
What do you think? Because so the diner we went to the other day,
the VIP diner,
it's going to be closing.
Yeah, totally.
So what do you think is, you know, in diner culture, there still are plenty of diners around here, but you see them closing. But then, I mean, what has there been like a new diner to open up like recently?
I just did a podcast with Michael Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
He is the diner guy. He actually wrote a book.
Okay.
About diner. And he's really into diner culture.
Yeah.
So on the shore down in southern Jersey, this young Greek couple wanted to open a diner. They've always been in the culture, and they opened a new one a couple of years ago. So there are some diners opening new.
What do you think is – so, I mean, you know, like you said, you would like to see things like, you know, diners having like Pat LaFrieda. You know, like what do you think is the next step for diner culture? And also because – like you said, those people are Greek. That was a very, you know, it is still a big component of the diner culture. A lot of Greek families came in and opened them up or took them over. What do you, have you seen or do you, like, any transition as far as other cultures coming in, taking over?
Yeah, Michael was telling me that there are several different ethnic groups coming in, and some are Asian.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he said Chinese. I know of some Koreans. The guy that I'm building his website for Restaurant Graphics, Tom Stravakis, he told me that in Pennsylvania, he created a diner menu for some guys from Ireland. He's like, they're real Irish. Like, they have the accent still. Michael also said there's down in the Pine Barrens, there's an Indian guy, and he worked as an Indian corporate chef, and now he took over a diner, and now he's got diner fare and Indian cuisine. He's like the little Tiffins.
Yeah.
So that's like, I'm definitely going to go down there and gonna talk to him about my documentary.
Sure.
So.
Is there like an overall goal for the documentary as far as like what story you want to tell and like what you want people to learn from it?
I want to get it to an Amazon model or a Netflix, but ultimately I'd like to tell a good story, someone that you can appreciate. And I think we can all appreciate an immigrant story and the evolution of the diner. And I'm trying to figure out what, for me, the real story is old Greeks passing away, having no heir apparent. So who do they give it to someone?
Yeah.
Do they sell it? What's the story? How do they hand it off? Because that's part of – that's to become an immigrant and open a restaurant or any kind of like business, you become an American.
Yeah.
To me, that's like the transformation.
Well, because you're becoming then such a big part of the community.
Like, yeah.
Food in the end of the day is what connects us all.
That's true.
It's food, and then to me, like music, and then sure. and then film. But like food in the end, like you don't need to know the language.
Nope.
You just need to you understand it a little bit more once you taste it.
Yeah.
And you realize, you know, like, oh, you know, and it's great because then when you get fusion things, so you have these Greeks come and then, you know, Greek Americans and mm-hmm. so you go to a diner and it's like you always see like a gyro on the menu. So I'm curious mm-hmm. if then it, let's say I don't know, if you had more Thai people or Vietnamese opening up diners, if we'd see like a banh mi, you know, like become, which is a sandwich that's becoming more and more popular in American culture.
Totally.
So I would love to see what the next, you know, I mean, obviously, as far as Caucasian immigrants, you mm-hmm. had the Irish, the Germans, the Italians were like some of the first, the Dutch coming over, obviously the English as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, like their food culture has been around for a while. Then the transition, I would say, obviously, then Latino, so like from Mexicans to Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and then now we're getting this wave of, you know, Middle East, India.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, you know, like,
I want to see Uzbekistan, because they, like, if you look at Uzbekistan, it's like you have Asian and some European, right, because it's that whole blend, the former Soviet Union, blending people together. But there used to be a restaurant in near Communipaw. And the guy made Korean and Uzbekistan combination of food. And he was like the whitest guy ever.
Yeah.
But he knew about the culture.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy I want to see.
That's cool.
Because you'd have the kimchi, you'd have that fermented vegetables, then you'd have like all that gamey meat they use. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, just what a great era of possible fusion of, you know. I've talked about it before on this podcast, but there was an episode of David Chang's Ugly Delicious, and mm-hmm. you know, he goes, and there's a lot of Vietnamese in Houston, and now they're starting to work with a lot of the Cajun dishes, which, you know, we're very, like, you don't touch a Cajun dish. Like, you don't touch crawfish. We do a crawfish boil, but now they're adding their spices and their flavors. And so that's just,
Vietnamese are, they have a very similar area in the Delta, and they have very similar food. Like, they have crawdads, too. They're
prawns.
But they use the same, they have the same, like, there's the lemongrass, they use the hot stuff. So I can totally see it, like, coexisting.
So what else about food? I mean, what about food just struck you to just become such a big part of your life? Like, what, you know, like you said, that your nana took you to a diner, but mm-hmm. I mean, then you were a chef for a while.
Yeah.
You've done the photography. You've got let's talk about your podcast and what exactly you do with that.
My podcast, Bvster, it's BVSTER.com.
Yeah, how'd you come up with that? I know you've told me before, but for the
Starbucks screwed up my name. I was the only one in the Secaucus Starbucks, and they put Buster and called me Buster, and I'm like, there's no one here, so I guess it's me.
Okay.
So then I had a website that I was. It was kind of like a business, and I wanted to pivot because Facebook was killing it. So there was already a food group.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do what I wanted to do. So I said, well, maybe I'd make Buster and talk about food.
Yeah.
And Buster was taken, BUSTR. It was it's like the Uber van service. Right. Kind of weird. So I remember that V at one time was you.
Yeah, you see on all the – I guess it's for Latin.
Yeah.
Like even like the old post office in the city.
That's true.
Or Roman, maybe.
Yeah, it's Latin based. Yeah. So I wrote it, and I got the URL, bvster.com. So I tell my wife, look, and my wife is a no holds bar. She'll tell me right up. She's my best friend, and she gives me the biggest compass ever.
That's awesome.
So I said, look, I'll call it Buster, because V was you. And she says, look, you can't do that. Just call it Buster. Stop screwing around. So that she actually coined it. And then she spelled it out phonetically.
Yeah.
So that's why I had it. For me, being a former chef and working, like I worked at one of the first online grocery stores.
Wow.
There were only three in the nation in 99. Peapod, Streamline, and Shoplink.com.
Okay.
Peapod's the only one to survive.
Yeah.
So we all failed. But I've always been in food technology, but I've always been like a big entrepreneur person, like hustle. You can be anything you want.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go back to the kitchen, but I wanted to be able to tell food stories and show people the love I had. And I like stories, and you go to the farmer's market, and you see all these young entrepreneurs, like these young kids. They're going to change the world with their granola. I just wanted to tell that story.
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't go out and be the granola maker anymore. I don't have it in me, but I could tell the story. I want to help.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, it's, it says on your, you know, for your podcast, it's a food, beverage, entrepreneurship podcast.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's, you know, I've listened to a few episodes, and I love it because it's, you know, you just in the your episodes, I mean, there's, is there like a set, we don't have a set time here. They definitely went over like an hour, but I mean, you know.
I try to keep it at 35 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But the podcast lasts about an hour, hour and 10 minutes at the capture part.
But yeah, no, it's just great that you talk with these people that have, you know, like their own. The ladies of Midnight Market.
God, I love those girls.
Lisi and Perla.
Yeah.
They're the best. And so it's just great. It's, again, like, it's like a diner.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting a lot of, like, local people together and just sharing their stories, which is...
I've changed my tagline for Bavuster and for what I do personally, but I call it telling stories through food, or I'm telling stories through food.
Yeah.
So, because the whole clunky thing that you just said, like... entrepreneurship, beverage, and food. It's just so, but it rolls better.
Yeah.
So, and I stole that from Griot, actually. They know it.
Yeah, let's shout out to Griot.
Yeah.
It's a great.
Oh, God, I love those guys.
Yeah, the sandwich that they have there. Yeah. I don't think they have like an official type that's just the roasted pork. I mean, I know you can get chicken too.
Yeah.
But it's like the roasted pork sandwich. But
so good.
It's so good. It's between two.
The Tostonis.
Yeah.
And then they have like the fermented vegetable. I don't think they're fermented, but they're definitely cabbage and some other things. Some
Like a kind of like a coleslaw, but then avocado on it.
Yeah,
and
like
and
a
roasted pork.
Definitely a slaw.
Yeah.
So they gave me a shout out about you. They said, "Do you know Kyle?" And I was like, "Yeah." I'm like, "He's me." I was telling John, the owner, like, "He's me 15 years ago." I'm like, "You're like my kid brother." So I'm like, "He's okay. You can trust him." So
yeah, they're good guys over there. Yeah. And I mean, again, so we both live in the Heights in Jersey City, and you've lived here for, I mean, I've only been here for a little over a year.
Yeah.
But you've been here for almost 10 years. What kind of food changes have you seen around here?
Wow. Okay, so when I came here, not one coffee place you could go to with a laptop. Zero.
Yeah.
Not even Dunkin' Donuts. I think Dunkin' Donuts had, like, they have Wi-Fi now. So it has changed. I would tell my wife, I'd whine to her a little bit because I was, at the time, I was kind of like hustling, and but I was going between here and Connecticut. I'm like, there's no place to go. And she goes, don't worry, it'll happen, and then the rents will go up. And of course, but Mod Cup came here, and I saw them in the farmer's market. And they were like these, I call them like chuckle nuts. I love the guys to death. I've known them since that very first event.
Yeah. How long have they been open?
Have been open 6 years.
6 years? Wow.
Yeah, it has to be 6 years. Like 20, I discovered them at the farmer's market in 2012. Yeah.
They're cool guys. They're, I don't know exactly what, they're like funky, quirky, you know, like.
Well, Travis from England. And Justin, the barista, the roaster, he's from Dayton, Ohio, like my wife.
Okay.
So they grew up in the same town. So
it's
kind of like our kid brother. We always tease him. So, when we go to Ohio, he goes to Ohio. So we're both in the same town during the holidays.
Yeah.
But they're big community guys. I always tease them a little bit. I said, you were cooler in the beginning. Because now they have an established business. Before they were a startup.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you walk in there, it looks like a chemistry set.
It really is,
They're pretty, it's pretty interesting, neat place to go to get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, just, I mean, even, I feel like at least a handful of places have moved, I mean, have opened up here since I've, moved here the last year. But it's a cool time, it's a great time for food and for... You know, like, I don't know what to call, you know, like, there's, we're kind of, like, the redheaded stepchild of New York.
Yeah.
Not, you know, and I don't mean that in any negative way.
Yeah.
For living here, for us living here, or for the city of Jersey City.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, we live next to arguably the, you know, the biggest, most important city in the world.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, definitely.
And it's weird, it's just because we're in a different state, you know. At the same time, we're the same distance as if you lived in Manhattan, you're going to Brooklyn, any of the other...
Yeah, Queens or...
Yeah, any of the other boroughs. But there will always be a little bit... There's been a handful from Time Out, New York.
Oh, God.
You know, somebody feed Phil. There's references like, you know, the best pizza is in New Jersey. Like, yeah, the best New York slice is in New Jersey. And, yeah, you know, there's always, I'm like, you know what? Like, let's, I want to keep New Yorker. You stay over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't start moving out more into Long Island and, yeah, yeah, stuff out there.
Yeah, don't worry about us.
Don't, yeah, but because we got some pretty cool, exciting things going on, yeah, right now.
I have a chip on my shoulder about Brooklyn. And I'll say this. I have a lot of friends that live out in Brooklyn. I've been out to Brooklyn. I have a client in Bushwick.
Yeah.
But I can't stand Brooklyn people. Because they think they're all that. Then they come here. Then they like, oh, this is like Brooklyn 15 years ago. And, yeah, like, stay over,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly. Right? We'll do our own thing and see what happens,
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
You know, but.
That's, yeah, they're not that creative anymore. I'm sorry. That's just my opinion and not the podcast.
Well, you know, like, when it comes to the movie that we're going to be talking about today, I've already covered the movie Diner on here, because otherwise, yeah, that would have been kind of a very appropriate
apropos
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, you know what? Like, we've met over coffee,
mm-hmm,
and they never say, like, where they are in the movie, but I feel some of them feels like, you know, cafes, diners. So we're going to talk about Coffee and Cigarettes, the 2003 film by Jim Jarmusch. It's pretty interesting. It's something I watched a long time ago, probably not too long after it came out, because that's like when I really started getting into film and the more, you know, the filmmaker's filmmaker, the avant-garde stuff, the guys from like the Lower East Side, East Village, that whole thing.
You just described all filmmakers when they go through their indie phase.
Yeah.
That's totally it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, 2003, I mean, I was... Yeah, in high school, and so, like, I can't remember the first film of Jim Jarmusch's that I saw. Maybe Broken Flowers, which is right around, kind of around the same time, like, I mean, maybe a few years later, mm-hmm, 2006 at the latest, but I think 2005 with Bill Murray. But he's just Jim Jarmusch. If you don't know who he is, he's one of the most, prestigious indie filmmakers out there.
Okay.
Just a real, you know... Real New Yorker and big part of the Lower East film scene,
mm-hmm,
like that whole from like mid late 70s on, and yeah, just really paved the way for guys like Quentin Tarantino,
yeah,
and like the Robert Rodriguez,
totally,
even Kevin Smith, like that mm-hmm 90s when like indie filmmaking became part of more of our language, you know, before then
very common, it became from obscure to common,
yeah. And so, actually, there was my previous podcast, P.S. I Love Hoffman, we did a great episode where we had the director Amos Poe on, and Amos Poe is one of those guys. Him and Jim Jarmusch went to NYU together in the 70s, and they just were friends with all the people that, like, played at CBGB's and mm-hmm all those artists from back then. We even have some of those, like, Iggy Pop is in this movie.
Iggy Pop's in it, yeah.
And his music is even used in this movie. And yeah, Amos Poe is just... Please check out that episode on P.S. I Love Hoffman, guys. It's just a really cool episode where this filmmaker that... And the reason we talked with him is because he directed Philip Seymour Hoffman in his first movie.
Oh, so, even yeah, I didn't know that.
A triple bogey on a par five hole. Very, very long name. You can find it, I think, on, like... Watch the whole movie on like YouTube or Vimeo or something like that. And Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it for just over a minute, like has one scene. But he was just really cool and shared so many stories of his career and like Amos Poe's career and then talking about how he met Phil and everything like that. And so it was kind of cool watching this movie because it was just kind of, it was a connection to my past podcast and just this filmmaker.
Yeah.
And so this movie, it's 11 short stories or also, you know, vignettes. And it's kind of interesting because the first one was filmed all the way back in, I wrote it down, 1986. So the first one that's in...
The very first one.
Yes,
with
Stephen Wright
and yeah,
Roberto Benigni.
Yeah.
And so that was filmed in 1986. The second one, so it's the first three. Those are the three that were like early filmed. And so Twins, 1989. And then I've read both 1993 or 1995 for the Somewhere in California, the Iggy Pop and Tom Waits one.
Yeah.
But first off, like, what did you think about? Like, what do you think about this film or these stories? Do you have a favorite?
I like vignettes.
Yeah.
I think vignettes are or little stories. I think they tell a beginning, a middle, and end. But the very first one, Like, I thought they improved it. Like, yeah. I was trying to pick it up because I hadn't watched the film in a while, and I had to watch it this morning again. Yeah. The very first one, I was trying to think, is this all improv? Because if it's improv, it's kind of genius.
Yeah.
Especially when they get up and they change seats and then change seats again.
Supposedly, Jim Jarmusch only filmed 2 to 3 takes, and so a lot of the stuff was improvised by the actors.
Yeah. I thought it was good. I thought the wacky part at the end where he's like, I have to go to the dentist. He goes, you go for me? He goes, yeah, of course. And then he goes. So, yeah. Like, that's not going to fix his dental problem, but I just thought it was cool.
Yeah, there's just a lot of oddball humor in this. And there's just, I mean, it's got, like you said, there is like a beginning, middle, and the end, but it's all obscure in a way. But just from like the names, I'll just read off the title cards for each of the things.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we've got Strange to Meet You, Twins, Somewhere in California, Those Things Will Kill You, Renee, No Problem, Cousins, ? Or no, I'm sorry, no, that one's just Cousins. And then Jack Shows Meg His Tesla Coil.
That's just funny. Is it?
Yeah. And then Cousins, ? Delirium, and Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
And so each of those, while they're their own little stories, have some connective tissue.
Yeah.
And so I don't know which. I mean, obviously it's cool seeing like fucking Iggy Pop and Tom Waits having a conversation. It actually won the short film Palme d'Or at Cannes back in the year.
Oh, that one, that yeah. One little vignette one.
Yeah.
Nice.
And
okay.
So yeah, that one short film, the short film Palme d'Or.
Okay.
And I'm actually very excited. This is kind of cool that we're talking. This episode's coming out around this time because about a little over a month from now, actually, on June 14th of 2019, The Dead Don't Die, Jim Jarmusch's next film, is coming out. And that's got like Adam Driver, Bill Murray, Iggy Pop is in it.
Wow.
And it's a zombie movie, and it's, you know, definitely like a zombie comedy. I'm not going to say it's Shaun of the Dead, because obviously Edgar Wright's got his own comedy style.
I wonder if it'll be black and white.
No, it's going to be, it's released in color. Yeah.
Is it a full theatrical release, or like indie house?
I'm sure it'll be first indie, but then it'll get, I mean, it's got a pretty good cast. Tilda Swinton's in it, Chloe Sevigny. So I'm just really excited for it, and it's kind of cool that we're talking this.
That's
when
cool.
He's got another movie coming out so soon. But yeah, did you have a favorite? Like I said, I loved the Somewhere in California, Iggy Pop, Tom Waits. Cousins ? With Alfred Molina and Steve Coogan was really fun.
My wife liked that one. Because in the morning we get the ready. We have like a ritual. Every spouse has a ritual.
Yeah.
We do coffee. So I was like, I got to do this. I'm going to be on a podcast. She goes, wait till you get to the one with Cousins. So that's her favorite. I do remember in the very first one where, who's the...
Stephen Wright, but Robert.
Stephen Wright. He talks about drinking coffee, going to sleep, and everything's like this.
Yeah.
There's a theme somewhere else where Bill Murray, I guess they were talking about, he was doing RZA.
Yeah, with the jizza, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, I drink it before, and I have dreams like this. So there's like a common thread in some of these.
Definitely.
So I thought that was a cool connective tissue, as you put it, like that word.
Yeah, there's even, I mean, Iggy Pop's music is the Stooges is playing in the background of the Meg and Jack White scene.
Oh.
Yeah. And then there's just, there's some other, like, connective tissue. The, from the Meg and Jack White to the last one of Champagne, there's the repeated line of, you know, Earth is a conductor of acoustical resonance.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's just, like, fun, this isn't, I mean, a movie that there's, I mean, obviously there's a whole lot to talk about, but let's just go, and I think one of the big things I want to talk about is it's Tom Waits saying that, you know, we're kind of the cigarette and coffee, you know, era.
Era generation, I think.
Generation.
Yeah.
Because, and then I think, you know, Iggy Pop is like, yeah, you know, like, what do you say? Abbott and Costello, right? They were the coffee and pie. Just
that's
right. Coffee and pie, coffee and pie. And I just love a lot of the characters in this, like, are always playing off one another, and one's definitely more cynical and one's more enthusiastic. So your Alfred Molina is really excited and he finds out that he's a distant cousin of Steve Coogan. And Steve Coogan is just very Steve Coogan.
Yeah.
But what do you think about, I mean, this whole, most of the, except for two of them, I think then the the RZA, the GZA, they're drinking tea, and then
yeah,
also,
they're
and then
anti-coffee.
They're anti-coffee
and smoking.
And, yeah, anti. Yeah,
except for the herb.
Yeah, so you do get like a pretty roundabout. You know, some people anti-cigarettes, some people anti-coffee, some people anti-both, or some people obviously loving one or the other or both equally.
Yeah.
And even the Tom Waits and Iggy Pop one, it's all about them saying, oh, I don't have an addiction, so I'm good at, you know, we always hear that, like, I can just have one.
That's right.
I'm definitely not like that. I mean, I've never, not as far as cigarettes, because I've never smoked a cigarette before. And even coffee isn't, well, I guess I do love iced coffee. I am very... I do love getting a nice iced coffee.
Yeah.
But I am that way, I would say, when it comes to, like, sweets.
Okay.
I can't... If you have... Like, I'm not going to eat the whole package of Oreos, but if there's, like, a bunch of Oreos... Like,
It's okay. We're in a 12-step group minus all the steps.
But, like, definitely, you know, like... And it's funny, because then that's what ends up happening is that then, you know...
Yeah.
They have the one, and then Iggy Pop leaves, because...
And then he has another one
yeah,
without there.
Yeah, and Tom Waits has another one.
That's good.
And, But what do you think of, like, the... Because it is very diner, you know, the coffee, the cigarette. Obviously not nowadays, because we're not allowed to smoke inside anymore.
No, definitely not.
But
I think what... It kind of brought me back in time when you could smoke and have a cup of coffee.
Sure.
And you could have a conversation. There are three things in the universe that are great equalizers. Being outside, smoking a cigarette, you can smoke... with anyone. It doesn't matter. Rich, poor, you could have a conversation.
Yeah.
A cup of coffee can do that too. Eating a meal at a counter. So there's some great equalizer in society, and I think that's what I learned. Like, you could talk about any subject over a cup of coffee and a cigarette.
Yeah, no, there was always something, like, in a way, cool and, like, a little mystical about smoking cigarettes. Again, I never smoked one. And, like, in college... I would be standing outside, like, on a balcony where people would be smoking, but you always did get the, like, even if it was simple as there was a girl you wanted to talk to.
There it is.
And all you need, like, it was just very, you know, like I said, like, it was, I can have a conversation with anybody, but I'm not necessarily a conversation starter versus someone like my roommate Tommy.
Yeah.
He just travels everywhere and ends up making so many new friends. And I can be that way. Like, I'll end up, you know, I'll go up to a group, like, when I've been traveling in the past, and I'll stay at, like, a hostel. And that's why I like doing, like, a pub crawl. But, like, just as far as, like, people sitting somewhere, like, I'm not necessarily going to be the first one to queue up, like, oh, I see you're drinking blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah.
But there was always something about cigarettes that had that, like, let me just light that for you.
Yeah.
And then you're in.
Yeah.
You know, as far as any one conversation, but particularly with, you know, there's a woman you want to talk
to. No, that's true, right? So fire can actually start a conversation.
Wow. Look at that. The metaphor right there. The symbolism. Yeah. And then coffee. Yeah. And like you said, coffee too. I mean, we met the first time over a cup of coffee. And that's, and you see that at places like Mod Cup, or even, I mean, you walk into a place like Dunkin' Donuts and they have their usuals. And even it's, you know, you go into a big chain place like that and they begin to know your name because you just come in and you like it a specific way. I loved in the Renee one.
Yeah.
Where he comes up and he's like, oh, would you like any, you know, would you like more coffee? And starts pouring it before. And she's like, I had it at the perfect color and temperature.
And it was black, I think. When he did the over the head.
But,
you notice she was reading gun magazines?
Gun magazines and motorcycle.
Which is, there's gotta be some, like, hidden meaning in that.
Yeah. There's definitely, yeah. So there's, like, fun things in these, like, the, where is it? It's the twins one.
Mm-hmm.
They are siblings of Spike Lee, the filmmaker.
Oh, see that? That I didn't realize that.
And then there's even later on in the Cousins ? One with Alfred Molina and Steve Coogan. When Alfred Molina, Steve Coogan is kind of, you know, mean to Alfred Molina and really is interested, says the whole, oh, you know, I don't take anyone's number or anything like that. And then Alfred Molina steps away for a second and is having a conversation. He's like, hey, Spike. And then he comes over and Steve Coogan's like, oh, is that Spike Lee? He's like, no. He's like, oh, okay. Spike Jones.
Yeah.
It was just funny that even then, just that little connective tissue of this film that, you know, he made. So Twins was in 1989. Then I guess the rest, besides those three, then the rest of them were filmed in, like, 2001, 2002 for this 2003 release.
Yeah, because Jack White and Meg White weren't even together back then.
Yeah, and it's just and again, even yeah, with the music, you have your Iggy Pop, your Tom Waits, and then your Megan Jack in it.
In the Jack White, Meg White scene, did you see Lee Marvin's picture in the back?
Yeah.
I kept thinking, I'm like, who the hell is this person? It's Lee Marvin.
Yeah. Which for a second, I thought it was maybe a Thomas Edison picture. Because they were talking about Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, that would be his, the bane of a society. Or his,
exactly.
Yeah.
And even in that one, I feel bad I didn't write down their names, but the Spike Lee's brother that's in Twins, he's in that scene as the
he pops in.
Cut to 10 years later, he's in this other, you know, film.
Ah.
And all these people are also big time collaborators of Jim Jarmusch, just from like Ghostface, and then I wrote it down. No Problem. So the actor Isaiah Day, Bancoli, he's in a Jim Jarmusch movie that came out like the mid-2000s, late-2000s, called The Limits of Control. So he just has in these vignettes, he just has so many people that, you know, he's collaborated with and continues to collaborate with. And like I said, Iggy Pop and Bill Murray are in his next one. And you even see it, like, he ended up making a movie. Do you ever see the movie, he made Patterson?
Yes,
with Adam Driver.
Yeah, he's a bus driver.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the poet.
Yeah, yeah.
Bus driver.
That's right.
That's a good New Jersey movie.
That's totally a good Jersey movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so Adam Driver is going to be in this next one. So it's just really cool to see that stuff. And I don't know. It's just I really like the Cousins one too, with Cate Blanchett playing both her, you know, her real life self. And
I have to say that that one I didn't like them as much, because I didn't find it that believable, but
okay.
Because I mean, she's herself playing like what was a cousin. Yeah. But I like the fact that they did interlace the cousin part.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's just a lot of fun stuff like that. And it is interesting that he has a lot of these people. They're all playing themselves.
That's true. You really don't understand that until the Iggy Pop one, because they say who they are.
Yeah.
And when they kept calling Bill Murray, Bill Murray!
Yeah, Bill Murray. There's always those great names out there that you got to say both the first and last.
Yeah, like, Bill motherfucking Murray.
And I love, he's like, yeah, you're the RZA, you're the GZA. And
yeah.
He's like, yeah, you know, also like genius. And what does he say? Bobby Digital, and he's like, man, this motherfucker knows hip-hop.
that's good writing, but it's also good interaction.
Yeah, and then just even like the fact that the RZA and GZA are actual cousins, and in two titles of these short films are cousins and cousins with a question mark.
Yeah, so that's true.
Jim Jarmusch is just somebody that he clearly has a plan in mind and a story. And I was trying to read some articles and just understand these better, like because there definitely has to be some deeper meanings behind them, and like obviously just something special to him that he felt over 10 years later, from the original one to wanting to continue these, you know, coffee and cigarette stories.
I'm curious to find out why he took him time. Was it like between projects? And why settle on 11? Like such an odd number, right? Not 10, not 12, but 11. Not even a baker's dozen, 13.
Yeah.
But at some point, maybe it was like, it's never going to get any better. This is it.
Maybe. And I mean, if you think about it, back to that one that, you know, no problem. The characters, you know, like I like that one too, because it's like two best friends, and again, we have friends, we have twins, we have cousins, we have best friends. There's just a level of the different levels of intimacy. It's kind of interesting that we never have like a husband and wife or anything like that. But
Jack White, Meg White, they were married back then too.
Oh yeah,
but it's kind of like, okay, I'm a Jack White fan, and Meg White, they were saying they were brother and sisters.
Yeah, they had
for the longest. They had like a weird
controversial,
right?
Yeah.
He took her last name, which is, it is what it is. But it's just. But I think if you look at it, that's like the going against, breaking the rules.
Yeah.
But they're also claiming to be brother and sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so. It just kind of seems like right up Jim Jarmusch's alley.
Yeah, totally.
But with that no problem when the character is rolling the die and he keeps rolling doubles.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like again, 11. You know, it's doubles there. It's just all very.
That's true. 11 is 2 ones technically on the dice. Huh.
So it's all.
That's cool.
All weird things.
Did you notice the cigarettes when they do the over the table shot? I was like, okay, what's like? Because a lot of times I like a visual cue. Camel 3 or 4 times the brand. Meg White smokes something called Detroit, and it's got the Pontiac logo, the Pontiac Indian head, like from the old Pontiac days. Somebody rolls her cigarette. And then, of course, there's Marlboro. But I was like, okay, how many different cigarettes, the brands? And there was one I didn't recognize.
Yeah, there was also French cigarettes.
Yeah.
In the Steve Coogan one, I think, right?
Yeah.
And then you have, like we said, the characters that are... either both don't smoke or one is against them. It is funny here, like the Riz and the Jizza being anti-tobacco. Anti-tobacco, even anti-caffeine.
Yeah.
And all that. And just like, and giving Bill Murray the, you know, gargle the,
oven cleaner.
Oven cleaner. But first, half water, half hydrogen peroxide, right?
In water, yeah. Don't swallow it. Just gargle it.
Don't swallow it.
But the end of that clip is like, he'd hear him gargling.
Yeah, in the background.
And he's like, what is he? I wonder if it's oven cleaner or that. No, let's leave now before.
Let's head out of here. You know, like, I'm not the whole scenes, because I think each of these are, like, around, like, 10 minutes long, but I'm going to play a little clip, and did you say that you had a favorite? I mean, the...
Oh, yeah, actually, the one I like the most, I think I appreciate it more now, is Those Things Will Kill You.
Yeah.
That, and I think because when I first saw it, I didn't understand, like, the old guy mentality.
Yeah.
And now that I live in New Jersey, and if you go, like, North Bergen...
Sure.
There you have these old, like, North Bergen, they're either Cuban guys or Italian.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me if the Sopranos had the cousins that...
100%.
If they had the cousins that no one liked, but they showed up 10 minutes late to everything after they left the place that serves the pig that, you know, they were on the street. Those were the cousins.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, the actors, Joseph Regano and Vinny Vella, and then there was Vinny Vella Jr. And it's just a... It reminded me of like a scene that you would see in Sopranos, which this is right at like the peak of Sopranos.
Yeah, totally. You
know, time too. So
yeah,
because what Sopranos ran from like 1999 to 2006 or something.
Yeah, 06, 07. I think 06.
Yeah, but so let's play like a little from that scene.
You're a fucking moron. You know that?
Now what?
I can't believe that you're still smoking a fucking. Vinny, they'll fuck you up. They'll kill you. Believe me.
What were you put on this fucking earth to annoy me?
But you said you were going to quit. Instead, you spend a fortune so those big tobacco companies can get fucking rich. And then you get cancer. And then the fucking doctors and the hospitals, they can get rich. And the undertakers, too. All because you want to smoke like a fucking moron.
Well, I can't help it. I'm fucking addicted, okay?
So... coffee and cigarettes? That's your lunch? That ain't healthy, is it?
You're drinking coffee, so don't break my fucking balls.
But Vinny, I had lunch already.
So I'm on a diet, okay? Jesus. Wait.
Yeah, that is such a... That has such a New Jersey vibe to New York.
It does. Like, but I like the fact when they ask the kid, and the kid does all mime. He doesn't talk.
Yeah, he is.
And then he's like, you want to eat the peas? He says, they're Chinese. He goes, and then he does it. Okay, of course, this is racist. You have to watch.
Yes.
He slants his eye different because he doesn't speak. And, Japanese. There's a difference.
Definitely a couple of politically incorrect things happening in that scene. But this... these were just all very, creative and, they were individual, but at the same time had that connective tissue to it.
Yeah.
And so I there really wasn't any, I like writing down trivia that I find on it, but there really wasn't any trivia for it. So coffee and cigarettes, I don't know. Just I would say check it out. There's definitely...
It's an indie classic. and yes. you'll get something out of it. Even if you find something that's dull, but now when you talk to someone about it, someone else has a different take, and you're like, I see it differently.
Yes. I think, well, that's a good point. And I think that there's definitely at least one out of the 11 stories for somebody.
Yeah.
So you might not like 10 of them, but you'll definitely like one of
you
them.
Definitely you definitely get one.
I think I like all of them, but there are definitely ones that resonate more with me or just entertain me more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, coffee and cigarettes. Check it out.
It's a must.
All right, well, we have our famous food scene segment, so I'm going to have you pick one out. Let's see which one you end up picking out.
The old 96er, The Great Outdoors, John Candy. Oh,
that's a classic scene. Comedy. John Candy, Dan Aykroyd. Just a fun, you know, family going on vacation. Talk about, you know, it's kind of appropriate for this because they're just two different characters and they clash with one another, which happened a lot in Coffee and Cigarettes. So let's check out that scene and then we'll talk about it.
I'll have the Royal Canadian Mounted Beef Barley Soup.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
And then that bucket of salad.
Good. Well, I'll split that with you.
You will?
Yeah.
All right, do that. That would help. And then the, I guess the medley of perch.
That's my favorite. Okay.
Miss, what's the old 96er?
Oh, that's our world-famous Paul Bunyan's Blue Ox Steak. It is a 96-ounce prime-aged beef steak. And if you or any member of your party orders the old 96er and finishes, everybody eats for free.
Not bad, huh?
Want to go for it, girls? How about you, Chet?
People seem to like that. Yes.
I'll try it.
Okay, great.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Seriously, though, has anybody ever eaten one?
Oh, no. No, not in my lifetime, no. Good God.
I think that just about does it.
He's not done yet.
Well, he may take a little while with that last bite, but it'll go down.
That ain't the last bite.
Well, sure it is. There's nothing on that plate but gristle and fat.
Double the bet.
Oh, God, no.
No problem. Listen, if I can get a dessert down him, I think you could throw in a couple of Paul Bunyan hats for the kids.
Boy, that's...
Dan Aykroyd's character, yeah. though, going back to our first Coffee and Cigarettes, he smokes those annoying cigars through the whole... So I remember it's like a tree log.
Yeah.
He's smoking it, and they're like, oh, come on, can you go smoke that outside?
Yeah.
So it's the kind of, cabin yeah. they share. Yeah.
But, I mean, this is... We took family vacations, meaning like my parents, my sister and I.
Yeah.
There were a few that, like, we did a beach house, and then some family members would come and, you know, stay a couple of nights because there was an extra room there
yeah.
or whatever, or then I would sleep on the couch or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing to this extent that, like, that I've had an experience like this. But definitely in my adulthood, seeing something on the menu
yeah.
and being like, oh, sure, you know. And, like, and having something to prove. And John Candy is just absolutely hysterical in this scene with that big
I know.
How many ounces?
Oh my God, 96 ounces. I think they said like you have to eat all the gristle too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's just about done.
Yeah.
That's just John Candy and Dan Aykroyd. I mean, yeah.
But at the end, Dan Aykroyd sums it up best. He's John Candy just eating everything, and then he's like, after he's done it, great, and we'll have some of those T-shirts. And then he's like, he's putting extra things on it because they pay for the bill,
yeah.
and T-shirts and this and that, and let's go on out of here. So he was like the hustler, like the faux hustler.
Yeah.
But I just love that he caps it off, and John Candy's like, oh, I can't function.
Is there any meal like I mean that you've just been just absolutely feeling like obliterated after?
Oh, you know, prime rib. I love prime rib.
Yeah.
Oh, I could eat it all the time. But after eating prime, I've cut way back on my red meat consumption.
Sure.
If I ate it today, I'd be like, oh my God, I got to only eat half. But
yeah.
Or like a massive burger.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a diner it's in the middle part of New Jersey. And they have it's a huge burger. It's like a whole table.
Yeah.
So, and they have a challenge. You have to eat it all in one sitting. You have to sign a like you hold harmless the diner because they don't want to be sued.
Yeah.
So that's crazy there.
There is a lot, and you know, you see on social media just more and more food challenges, mm-hmm. or just food, like, you know, like people like, you know, this on top of that, and you're gonna, I mean, you just see it more and more. I mean, one of the cliches is like the macaroni and cheeseburger. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you don't need macaroni and cheese on top, especially if it's a good burger.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it on or in it. Sometimes it's even like inside the meat. You
yeah.
know? That's just, I mean, when we went to the VIP diner, it's just like a good burger should just be, I like putting some condiments on every once in a while.
Yeah.
But in the end of the day, all you know, for a cheeseburger, just a good bun,
yep.
good meat, good cheese.
Yeah. Good balance of the condiments and the lettuce tomato ratio. There's a place we went to in Montclair called Brickling Curry.
Yeah.
On their menu, they have, because they specialize in curry. It's British India.
Sure.
They have a thing that says, you want to try the hottest curry ever? You have to give them like a verbal, okay, I won't hold you if I get sick. It's on the menu.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Their food is really good. I wouldn't do the challenge. I don't think I'd like curry that much.
Like, none of that stuff, whenever I eat, like, you know, like, I mean, obviously a big part of bar culture, mm-hmm. You know, is like getting, you know, like you go and like you want to get some good buffalo wings, you know, good hot wings.
Yeah.
You know, I had a friend that, like, you know, where he went to school, you know, they had atomic wings. I'm like, I don't want that. I don't need to eat anything to prove anything to anybody.
Yeah.
And, like, one of my favorite things ever is just saying no to people when they're trying to peer pressure me into something.
Yeah.
I'm just like that, like, I don't give in to peer pressure. And especially when it came to food, because, like, I like enjoying it. And then also if I'm spending my money, I don't want to waste it on something.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you see on the, you know, First We Feast, right?
Yeah.
With, what's that guy's name? Sean Evans, I think.
Yeah.
Who hosts the wing show.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all these celebrities going on there, and you've got someone as, you know, like, physically small as, like, Scarlett Johansson, then you have Shaq, and you just see these people, you know, I get it, like, that realm, it's promotion, and like, that whole stuff, but it's just, like, that doesn't interest me whatsoever.
How does a show like that build traction, then get all big stars? Because it's really probably started as a goof.
Yeah, it also, I mean, it's exactly, it's just like, I mean, now they have the burger show on there too, just going around and trying all, but like, yeah, a show like that with, I feel bad forgetting the name of it because I've seen the episodes before, but like, I think it's called Hot Wings or Hot Ones.
Hot Ones.
And like, I mean, it's just something that I guess just caught steam at the right time, and it just, it's a fun way for, you know, people love seeing celebrities having an experience that your everyday person can have too.
True. I guess it's kind of like experiencing like, they're eating food that I can eat the same way, and they react the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I think nothing will, in one way or another, we've all been where John Candy was in that scene, and just that, you know, maybe obviously not consuming that quantity, but, because I don't even know how big that steer must have been to
kind
get
of huge.
That cut of meat from it.
Right.
But that uncomfortability, but then also, you know, but wanting something to prove because, you know, he looks at Dan Aykroyd, and Dan Aykroyd is supposed to be all, you know,
the stockbroker.
Yeah, exactly.
Has everything.
Having the perfect life.
Yep.
And then just, yeah. But, and then wanting to, you know, show to his kids that, you know, and his wife that he's, that John Candy is, can take on this mantle and is the man of the house, but that's just, there's plenty of other ways to do that besides eating
a huge chunk of meat.
Huge chunk of meat.
I remember one time I wanted twin lobsters. We went to a place and I was like, twin lobsters. Well, great. I want it. I talked about it all day. And when I finally got there, I was like, oh God, twin lobsters. I mean, there was like not a whole lot in the lobster, but after you've eaten everything else, you're like, oh God, I've got to take these two lobsters down. But I was sick as a dog. After.
Yeah, exactly. And then that makes that meal so much less special.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's important. I'm learning more and more. I mean, you know, just obviously it's just comes with age and just different experiences.
Yeah.
But you don't go into a place hungry, like, especially if it's a place you really want to, like, enjoy your meal. You know, make sure, like, you know, your eyes aren't bigger than your stomach.
Yeah,
you know,
it's okay to take food home.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay to take food home. Yeah, there's just a lot of lessons that, you know, to take away from a scene like this.
Definitely. And don't use liquid encouragement like bourbon. Which I love bourbon, but I've actually cut down.
Last segment, gut instincts. It's our little, you know, speed round where I'm just going to, you know, no time limit, but just whatever comes to your mind first.
Okay.
Favorite fast food?
Shake Shack.
Shake Shack. There we go. With our boy Pat LaFrieda.
Pat LaFrieda.
Go to alcoholic beverage.
Bourbon.
Bourbon.
And craft beer, but bourbon first.
What kind of craft beer you like?
I like old school German. Dunkelweiss is my favorite. Nice. I could bathe in it. I'm not an IPA fan, but I like Pilsner. I do appreciate a Saison.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do have an Achilles heel when it comes to some of that.
I just went to a new brewery the other day, Ghost Hawk, in First Passaic County's first brewery.
So yeah, I saw it on your IG story, a lot of jelly, actually.
Yeah, no, it was a really cool, I'm going to release like a little video on it. And it's cool because it's right across from Rutt's Hut, which has their famous Ripper.
That's right.
You can walk right across the street, and so that's what we did, got a couple of beers, yeah. And then went across the street, got a few rippers, I filmed a little bit of it. It was cool. Like the mayor showed up.
That's
ribbon cutting. So it was just another nice local thing going on.
There's another good brewery to Brick City.
Oh yeah, Brick City. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you had it?
Yeah, because that's all Brick City Elementary. They're all like in the same.
It's like Little Ferry.
So, yeah, Little Ferry. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went there when I was with Kate. She was my first podcasting partner.
Okay.
So we went out to an event hosted by the Midnight Market Girls.
Cool.
It was a Garden State Mall. And then we came back and we were like, let's hit Brick City. I keep hearing about this amazing place from another small brewery, the Jersey Girl Brewing.
Yeah.
Aaron Charles was telling me, you got to go out there and try it. So we try it. The beer out there is so good. They had like a Mosaic. I'm not an IPA guy. A Mosaic IPA. I was like, oh my god! They had had heat. It had all this cool like complexity.
Yeah,
I got so smashed. I did my first ever. We tried podcasting with my DSLR.
Yeah. Okay.
So we have my first setup. It's the old H4N Zoom and the two mics. I set it up. Then I put the camera at the end.
Sure.
So. Yeah. You could tell we were so smashed. I had to sober up because I was dry.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I enjoyed Kate back then.
Yeah, Brick City. We're starting to, in North Jersey, get a pretty good craft brewery scene. I mean, we got NJ Beer Co. nearby.
Oh, God.
We've got Departed Souls right in Jersey City.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to actually do some work for 902 NJ. The same company now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do some pictures for them and shoot their ribbon cutting.
Awesome.
So they're a unique story. It's kind of hard to separate the two now that they've been married.
Yeah.
Well, UPS guy's here. Hang on.
Someone dropping off a package, I guess. Yeah. All right. Next question. Favorite childhood snack?
Hostess cupcake, the chocolate one with the white swirl.
Yeah. Those are great.
Hands down.
Yeah.
And then when we lived down south, they had Suzy Q.
Yeah.
Or Little Debbie was the southern version. So.
Sweet or savory?
I like savory, but I should like sweet.
Favorite food city?
New Haven, Connecticut.
Wow.
New Haven, Connecticut, picture this, might be the birthplace of modern day hamburger.
Really?
Yeah. There's a place called Lou's Lunch. It is started in the 1800s.
Wow.
They steam their cheeseburger. You can't put ketchup on anything. They use bread. You get, I don't think there's even cheese. It's steamed meat, white bread, tomato, and onion slice.
Oh.
That's it.
Huh.
And it's the oldest continuous by the same family burger place.
Wow.
So
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. And then I got married in New Haven. So Zinc, great shout out to a great restaurant. And Claire's Cornucopia, best vegetarian vegan place ever.
Cool. Boy.
Ever.
Gonna have to go up to New Haven.
Yeah, New Haven's got a great food scene.
Awesome.
And they have craft beer before when craft beer was kind of just percolating.
Yeah.
Now it's everywhere.
New Haven's not far from here at all.
No. No, no. Then Sally Pepe's Pizza might be the original.
They got the clam pie up there.
Clam pie, yeah. And there's a couple places. Like West Haven has a good place. Pepe's.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
New Haven. Favorite cuisine?
Breakfast. Eggs, actually. I like breakfast. Anything.
Yeah?
Yeah. Eggs. Period.
Okay.
Yeah. Omelet.
I like it. Guilty pleasure food.
Oh, God. Chocolate?
Chocolate, dark chocolate?
I love dark chocolate.
Yeah.
I love the darker, the better. Mm-hmm. But though I kind of slum it, I'll have like a Hershey's bar.
Hey, sometimes. I mean, it's funny. Like, I've been out to Hershey, Pennsylvania before, yeah. and just like, it tastes a little different out there. Like, it's like, you know, a good fresh Hershey bar. It's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Favorite condiment?
Oh, ketchup. And it's kind of very blue collar. I like mayonnaise.
Yeah.
I like to mix the two together.
Sure, yeah.
But if I had my druthers, just ketchup.
Ketchup.
Yeah.
Heinz? Like, are you strict when it, like, you know?
The old days, yeah. Heinz. But now you have Hunt's. And then wherever you go now, the cheaper the food costs go up, they keep giving you. It says ketchup with a C.
Catsup, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the last thing you ate?
Today I was at the VIP diner and I had blueberry pancakes.
Nice.
Yeah.
What would be your last meal?
Ooh, last meal. And I've kind of talked about this. Honestly, it'd have to be steak and lobster.
A little surf and turf.
Yeah, nice. Surf and turf. Because... health conscious wise, if I wasn't going to die, I wouldn't do steak and lobster. Yeah. But if I'm going to go to the chair, I'm going to the chair with steak and lobster.
Do you prefer to dine in or dine out?
I love eating out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I save more money by eating in, though. That's
true. Do you like to cook?
Yeah. Being a former chef.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, I mean, just when food is such a big part of your life, you're like, nah, I don't want to cook, you know. Like.
Yeah. Old me, no.
Sure.
New me, we eat in a lot because I can cook food, but I don't like cooking for people. I did it for when you feed 5,000 people a day, it's not that enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I like feeding my wife. I like trying new things on her, and then she's like, "Oh, that's great! You use spice in a new way or whatever." I'm always learning. And I don't care. You're always a student.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. What would be your spirit food? What food do you think best embodies you, your personality?
Wow.
Yeah, we go deep here.
Wow, spirit food. My spirit animal food.
Yeah.
The drunk version of William would be PB&J, and then it'd be sick. But the sober William, I have to say toast.
Just toast?
Just toast. Toast with real butter.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because you need that real fat, that high... calorie flavor. Oh. I can eat toast all day.
I like it. Just a nice piece of properly toasted toast with just seeing like the butter, the cut of butter just melting away on it. Right.
Then the drunk version adds the peanut butter and jelly.
Gotcha.
That's where it comes from.
What kind of jelly? Grape jelly? Strawberry jelly?
Old school grape jelly, but we get cherry jelly.
Ooh.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a different flavor.
You're going to the movies... Are you getting any snacks? What kind of snack are you getting?
Popcorn, and if I could tell not to put that fake salt on it.
Yeah.
I would rather have plain popcorn than a squirt of butter.
Sure.
That I also like Raisinets.
Oh, the only I time love I love Raisinets.
The only time I'll indulge in Raisinets is at the movies or Reese's peanut butter. The little cups or the little pieces.
Pieces.
Yeah.
The E.T.
pieces. I was going to say that's E.T. That's E.T.'s job, but you got it.
And last question, what's the greatest lesson you've learned in food?
For me, the greatest lesson is you can always learn something new. You can always use a different spice. So if you think food is just closed off, you can always open yourself up to a different way, a different approach. And I've learned that recently with a lot of like Indian spice. I like curry,
sure.
But I've learned to use curry in a different way.
Okay,
and
cool.
It's made it fun and enjoyable again.
I like it. Yeah, there's always another way to enjoy something, I guess, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's always, and or if you like something, that's how I was never really into wine, and then I started going to a place, you know, like, or I would go to a vineyard, and I would say, listen, I really don't drink wine. This is the things I don't like about wine. Yeah. They're like, well, then try this. Like, you find someone that, you know, can guide you the right direction.
I was like that with bourbon.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, when I was working at the Coach House in North Bergen, they had a bar, and not many people knew about the bar. And they let me hire a bartender, so I hired Joe, the bartender from Boston. He's actually from Maine, but he's a surly New Englander who loved bourbon. And I said, could we do a liquor tasting? And he said, yeah, why not? So we asked different vendors to come.
Cool.
And I learned more about, like, I understood Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
All right? But when you get into real bourbon,
yeah,
then you're like, well, Jack Daniels, whatever. So I learned that about bourbon. And that's why I became like, not a bourbon fiend, but an aficionado.
Yeah,
I love it.
Of sorts. Yeah. I like it. Will, thank you so much for coming on. Right now, please tell the listeners where they can find you, what you're up to, and all that good stuff.
You can find me at all my social media is kind of the same. My IG and is William F. Spencer. My website is williamfspencer.com.
There you go.
You can find the diner information on that. I'm going to get another URL. I'm working on that. Cool. Bvster is bvster.com. The IG for that is imbvster because someone already had the Bvster.
Wow.
And that's where you can find me or, you know, send me a text.
There you go.
There you go.
Again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have a little catchphrase to end every episode with. It's there's more to cut. So if you could just remind the foodie fans that there's more to cut.
Yeah, more to cut. There's more to cut in every episode. Keep listening.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
thank you.
And check out Bvster. I love listening to your episodes and just hearing what you talking with these local, you know, staples.
I have to get you on so we can do.
We need to do a
let's do a cross. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do?
Oh boy, I don't know. I'm gonna have to think about
this. I'm thinking we should do a beer thing.
Beer thing would be good.
And then we'll do a diner thing after.
Cool.
And then we'll do like an aspirin, like a Rite Aid version.
Or just get Mod Cup and we'll get all
caffeinated
up.
Oh my god. That's cool.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you such a